Thanks for tuning in to an episode of the SpringML Google Cloud Podcast. I'm Eric Clark, Account Director, and I'm here with Andrew Larimer today.
Hi.
And I guess we're just going to have this conversation. We want to talk about public works and specifically what we're doing from a smart city, smart government perspective. So this will be more of a series, but today we'll talk about public works and some of the awesome things that we're doing.
Absolutely.
In that space, yeah.
Yeah. Public sector stuff, super fun. What is it that you like about working public sector? I know we've talked about, you know, different, you know, feelings. Private sector stuff, public sector stuff, interest, you know, both can be exciting. What gets you excited about public sector?
It's a good question. I'm going to ask you the same thing, so you can be thinking about it. I feel like in this role, as a technology consulting company, you basically sit in the middle of, like, in this intersection of figuring out business needs and technology, and almost like a technology translator, right? And I think we need more technology translators sitting in government meetings to be able to figure out what the right solution is. Like, it's not that tech in and of itself solves problems, but it's a huge enabler, and I love being part of those conversations to figure out how to have great impact on citizens, right? And that's really exciting. Like,
absolutely,
you can make meaningful change.
Yeah, why do you feel like there aren't as many of those translators, you know, in public sector rooms?
Yeah, I think probably the biggest reason, unfortunately, is just the pay gap. A lot of these skills go to the private sector because the pay is better, the benefits are better. And, you know, sadly, more people just don't have that perspective a lot of times of, you know, wanting to serve in that way.
It takes a real service mind, somebody who really cares. Yeah. To me, that's what I love when we get the chance to work on public sector stuff, is that the intentions are benevolent, you know, like the goal is to help a bunch of people. Usually in some fair and equitable way, and try to actually make things better for a lot of people. There's some of that obviously in the private sector as well, delivering value for people, whatever. But in public sector, I feel like it's like even more just on the nose. Hey, let's try to do something good here, you know. And whether or not it always plays out, you know, the intentions are really solid.
Yeah. So we're going to get to some really cool examples here in the public workspace in a little bit, but I want to ask you that same question though, Andrew. What about for you? Like, what gets you really excited about doing work in the public sector, but being a technologist?
Yeah, well, I think, like I said, it's like, it's the intent, the possibility of attempting something for the good of other people. You know, we're not about, in this moment, maximizing any value or anything like that. We're maximizing happiness, or we're maximizing the quality of life, or, you know, genuinely trying to make things better for a group of people. And that's appealing, you know, that's really like, feels like you get a few good wins in a career, you know, in your career doing something like that. And like, that's satisfying. That's a satisfying life, you know, to like make a couple of real dents in making a large number of people's lives better. That's, you know, really satisfying stuff.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think this series, you know, smart government series that we're going to do on this podcast is going to be really interesting, because there's so many use cases that span so many different areas. You know, there's workforce services, there's human services, there's healthcare, there's, you know, public works we'll talk about today, you know, managing infrastructure, so many different ways to make a really big impact. So
yeah. Well, maybe let's jump to some of the use cases. Like, you know, I before we're sort of too abstract here, you know, what are some of the spaces that we've seen this in, right? I mean, we're recording this from Memphis, where we're working on pothole detection, we're working on blight detection, and all of the different ways that can look like, right? Blight and general kind of infrastructure and beautification projects. You know, what other ideas do you hear people interested in the public works arena?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, public works is charged, they have a tall order, right? Like, think of all of the hard infrastructure in
a
city.
Hardest thing.
Yeah, literally the hard things, you know, drainage and wastewater and, you know, street maintenance and cleaning things and maintaining utility poles and street signs. Like, there is just so much to manage. I think it's underappreciated. You know, if everybody drives on roads, whether you're on a bike or walking down a sidewalk in a city street or something like that, and just next time you walk around, look at all the signs and look at the paint stripes on the road. Like, somebody's managing that, right?
Yeah.
And like you mentioned, the potholes, you know, that can be a big hot button issue for cities. But yeah, like, next time you walk around, just think about all of those things. And think about, I think that, you know, to take this a little step deeper, and let's just talk about potholes for a second, because that's a really interesting one that we've been working on for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Usually it's citizen reported, right? So you're kind of lagging behind.
Right.
You're not ahead of that. And so to give a public works organization that's responsible for roads a way to optimize how they handle that, right?
Sure.
To get ahead of it, to be more proactive, that not only can save money from a liability standpoint, but it just makes the city better.
Yeah,
right?
Well,
for everybody.
And I think, like, to me, one of the really appealing things is that not only are you, you know, if you're relying on citizens to report it, right, then the potholes you're addressing are the ones where citizens have time to report one or multiple times the potholes. So you're really, like, giving preferential treatment to places where there's a stay-at-home, you know, partner or whatever. Or maybe even elderly folks, but people who have time. Whereas I think if you can remove that responsibility from their plate and scan the city yourself and get those, you know, now you can address where there's, like, working families or single, you know, mothers or whatever, you know, people who are, make up the real, like, lifeblood and workforce of your city, and you can make their lives better by not having them have to be responsible for having this time to call in and report things, but instead you can actually get out there. And to me, that's part of what really appeals to me about kind of, you know, smart government or database government or algorithmic government anyway, is like, we can remove some bias that's in our current, you know, kind of invisibly in our current systems by just treating everybody fairly and equally. And I think that's really cool.
For sure. That is really cool. So Andrew, you are our machine learning practice lead for SpringML. And I want to ask you a little bit more on the technology side. Like, maybe we go with the pothole example. This is a vision AI sort of system. Can you talk about, like, the challenges? Like, I think we've seen a lot of traction around vision AI, but a lot of POCs that never make it to production. Maybe you can kind of chime in on you know, what it takes to do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's you mentioned, for example, with public work stuff, how this is, like, this is real stuff, right? Real wear and tear on real things, roads, signs, et cetera, out in the world. And I do think that that's part of what machine learning and vision specifically is, like, ready for now. You know, we are at the place where this is how technology and kind of, you know, things that needed to be measured precisely before, maybe, like, technology can now interface with more real world, rougher, fuzzier things through machine learning. That's a lot of what machine learning does, is, right, interface precise technology with a fuzzy world. And I think through vision specifically is one of the ways that it can do that really well. And public works infrastructure is a great, great opportunity for that. Partially because what machines can do that humans have a harder time with is kind of maintain perfect concentration. Mm-hmm. You know, so where it might be hard for a human to, like, drive and perfectly document each pothole they pass over a long route, you're like, you know, pull over and write it on a map and whatever. Machines can maintain that perfect level of concentration and, you know, categorize them consistently over time without deviating over the course of a route or anything like that, you know, based on how many they've seen. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there. You asked about, you know, kind of what's the difference between, you know, POCs and things making it to production. I mean, well, you know, one thing that I think is important is that people don't try to do everything at once, you know, like, I mean, I think there's really two things. One, I do want to say, start with POCs. You know, you don't have to know what your production system necessarily is going to be, because you're going to learn a ton as you dive in and approach one of these projects. So I do think there is value in starting with a lightweight POC.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, to like kind of get, you know, start small, take those first steps, learn, like for example, as we've talked about blight, you know, okay, well, we can't just build a model that detects all blight. Like blight is many things and there are right. many different, you know,
start with
enforcement, you know,
yeah.
different codes and stuff that are violated that all are sort of grouped in colloquially as blight, but actually it's a lot of different things that we're looking at. And I think you kind of get specific and break things apart when you approach something as a POC. But then once you've kind of validated an idea or chosen the particular slices that you're investigating, how do you make sure that it gets to production? Well, I think one hurdle is data. Right, good models are trained with a sufficient amount of data, and a lot of times people have like POC amount of data, you know, maybe under 100 examples or maybe a couple of hundred examples. But I think a model really matures to be production ready once there's a POC out there and you're using it, but now you've got time, you've collected more data. And now maybe you've got several hundred examples or a few thousand examples or potentially more over time, and now retraining that model, relabeling, you know, this new data either through human labeling or there's, you know, ways of speeding that up with semi-supervised learning where you can match things to similar other, you know, similar labeled data in the past. But yeah, really, I think getting more data is a big part of it. And then also just making sure that you're using the correct pipelines. You know, we're Google Cloud partners. Google Cloud has a really great new pipeline system, Vertex AI, that has just come out that really handholds the user through that and makes that easier. But I would say those are really the two next levels of maturity after a good, you know, validation of a concept through a POC to getting something to production is more data and a well thought out pipeline. Machine learning pipeline.
For sure. Yeah, that's great. Those are really good points. I totally agree. Start with the POC and a well-defined use case, because if you try to do too much at once, you're just kind of signing
it's
up.
Too for, daunting. For, yeah. It's too daunting. It's to too daunting to dive right in. Yeah. And it's too much to promise that it's going to work in exactly this way. Right. And there's all these things that are, you know, like any other ambitious project, it's worth having a pilot phase to dip your toe in the water before you commit all of these resources and make all these promises. Yeah.
Yeah. So another thing that I think is important here as you think about vision AI, that's a focus area for Andrew and I here at SpringML. And we both come from a video background. It's kind of interesting that we've landed in this spot in the technology world, but have this kind of heritage behind us in video. I mean, Andrew owned a production company and ran that for several years.
Yeah.
And I went to school for film and media production, but I never actually did it as a profession, but I've always had that. And I think video is one of those rich data sources that people don't look at and say, that's a rich data source. You know, they look at it for art or entertainment purposes, right? And that's your view of, you know, motion pictures, right? But when it comes down to it, just an encouraging story is if you're in government and you've got cameras, right? Think about where your cameras are today. Most governments, most cities have cameras everywhere. They're on
yeah.
the street corners. They're, you know, on city buses. They're all over the place. They're on police cars. Your police officers are wearing cameras, right? A lot of times on their vests. And those are essentially eyes that are seeing your city. And there's a rich amount of data that can be harvested from those,
absolutely.
Those sources.
You've got all
yeah.
these ambient sensors out there that are perceiving the world as we do, you know?
Right,
always.
Right.
And
full fidelity and color and everything. And,
yeah.
And that is just, I think, a mindset. Maybe it's not a mindset, but it's just a different way of looking at things or just thinking. You know,
yeah.
If there's a challenge that your city is facing and you're trying to solve it, like potholes or blight
yeah.
conditions, whatever, think about how a human would go view that situation and think, where are the cameras
yeah,
that
right.
you could leverage for that? Yeah.
Right. It might seem impossible to feel like, oh, how are we going to like permeate all of our neighborhoods with whatever? But you're already doing that
yeah.
with various vehicle fleets that are going there, whether they already have cameras or not. And then, you know, you've also already got cameras out in many places likely. And like, yeah, thinking about that existing data stream, like
yep.
you said, and then being able to harvest additional information from that is really, really powerful. Absolutely. You know, another cool thing about vision compared to other data that can be used for ML, you know, sometimes we're sort of faced with different challenges and different kinds of data coming in where we want to, you know, read from various sensors or things. And one of the questions is like, well, is the signal that we're trying to predict in this data, you know, that could, it's not always clear.
Right.
You know, for example, if you're looking for fraud or something like that, it's like, is there enough of a signal that somebody's committing fraud in this data? Well, you know, there's certain things that have been validated and we know there is, but it's not always clear. But a cool thing about vision is that humans can look at the incoming data and be very clearly know, can we see the thing that we are looking for in these images?
Right.
And if you can, then great, a machine learning model can as well. And if not, then okay, it's probably not in there, you know? And so I think that's really like, it's easy to validate on the front end whether a model can be built given a you know some data set, because it's the machines see things not in the same way that we do, but nevertheless we can both tell if the signal that we're looking for is there in the data.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, you know, we're here in Memphis right now.
Yep.
And let's get practical about, you know, the reason that we're here and the project that we're actually working on while we're here. So the Public Works organization here in the city of Memphis, we've been working with for a couple years now, and they've championed this event, or not this event, this solution to go out and tackle the problem of potholes, and now adding on another use case with blight. And it's really spurred on some great conversations across other Public Works organizations in different cities. And so I hope, you know, other Public Works folks hear this and get, you know, encouraged and inspired to think about things differently. But let's talk about the solution. So,
Sure. So
what we have right now going on is a solution that is putting some cameras, some eyeballs out on city vehicles, and in particular street sweepers. And the reason for that is to see most of the city on a regular basis.
Right, and you know, with other benefits, they go slow.
Yep.
You know, they cover the city. They're in all the residential neighborhoods. They scan at a frequency that's sort of more reasonable, like, you know, they see the whole city about two or three times a year, which is attractive,
right,
as opposed to, for example, garbage trucks and stuff that are many more vehicles that would need to be decked out and then see these neighborhoods every week, you know, which is maybe overkill to detect
right. Something
like potholes. So kind of thinking about the frequency, the number of vehicles involved in a fleet, all of that kind of made the sweepers a very attractive fleet for this particular project.
Yep. So it's cameras on an existing fleet that has routes that cover most of the city.
Yep.
And that's kind of the capture portion of this, right? We need to see the city. And so then what's after that?
Well, so once the detections have been made, you know, we nominate detections of potholes or of blight. And then we have this human in the loop component, which is, I think, something that is good for people to think about. And quite frankly, is often a good idea in a machine learning solution, especially where resources are going to be deployed to go out and, you know, fix something. You know, these models can be very good, very powerful, but they're not perfect. And especially while we're still kind of gathering data, there's going to be false positives, you know, something that isn't actually
right. A
pothole that is nominated.
Would you agree that there's no 100% accurate machine learning model?
I mean, there are some, but it's only in very controlled,
environments
where you're, for example, like circuit boards and stuff, looking for errors in circuit boards in a factory
where the
lighting is consistent, the board should look identical each time. Those can get pretty close to 100% or fully 100%. But in the real world, you know, in a real street where there's
yeah. All
sorts of different lighting conditions and weather conditions and different kinds of trash that can blow across, it's not going to be perfect, but it can be pretty good. And then you can kind of dial in the threshold where, you know, at which you consider something, you know, where you want the alert.
Right. This is like the perfect is the enemy of good. I think I do think we should address that, right? Like some people might have this perception that machine learning or AI needs to get to that 100% mark for
right. Whatever
reason, or they expect because it's a computer doing it.
Right, it's either going to be perfect or it's broken.
Right,
but it's
not binary.
Right,
it's
and it's much more like a person in that any given person is not going to be perfect at their job.
Yep,
and you know, and but is going to be pretty good. You know, and often you know you're in that kind of situation, and also you know ultimately if you've got you know your person who's you know sending out these crews or whatever, instead of them needing to go drive around and validate certain things or sending out, you know, people to validate these things. It's like you instead you get a picture and it's, you know, indicated that, you know, where this thing is, what we're talking about. Mm. It's got all the metadata that it needs to become a ticket if it is, you know, ready to send out a crew. But a human can review it and say, yes, let's you know, integrate this with our existing ticketing systems, send somebody out. Or no, this one's not, you know, this is not actually something we want to address for any, you know, any given reason. And then, you know, then we can store that information and not create a duplicate ticket the next time, you know, one of these vehicles drives by that particular thing. So by having a human in the loop, you can make sure that you're, you know, you're kind of protecting yourself against automated allocation of resources, at least at a given maturity level, until, you know, you've gotten enough data and the performance of this thing is perfect enough. Well, then maybe you eventually get comfortable and switch over to a more, you know, automatic deploying of resources. But very often, once you're past the POC phase and in early production phases, keeping a human in the loop just helps you keep tabs on it.
Right.
And then also you can, you know, as for example, seasonality in some of the, you know, whatever you're looking for happens, like a human can sense that too. Are your crew super busy? All right, well then maybe we want to only hit the worst, you know, potholes in, or whatever. Or if, all right, we've got some downtime, well maybe now we lighten it up and we go hit some earlier things, you know?
Yeah.
So there's so many factors to take into consideration that the model doesn't necessarily need to take into consideration, but kind of keeping one person in there. And then you just make the interface, you know, nice and handy for them to do it. Like we've described, like Tinder for potholes, where you can just be like, yes, 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 no, no, no. Keep it lightweight and interactive.
That's a good looking pothole over there.
Yeah, right. That's a good, that pothole looks like your mother. Keeping people in there. And then, and you know, in integrating with existing systems, like we talked about, you know, with ticketing systems, et cetera, is something that we've found people really excited about. Can you talk more about that?
In this sense, you know, like what you're saying is this is more of like an augmented intelligence solution, right? Right. It's AI, it's ML, it's doing the detections, but it's augmenting your ability as a public works organization to respond to various issues in your city.
Yeah.
And so typically what we'll find, right, is that a pretty mature city, you know, medium, large cities, that even smaller cities have systems, right, to manage this sort of thing. Could be on paper.
Sure.
in Memphis's case, right, there's a ticketing system, right, used to dispatch crews to go fix various issues. So what we do is we take these detections and we surface them on a map view so you can kind of see exactly where each individual pothole detection is. And then decide what do you want to do with that. And so you can click a button, and simple as that, and basically just create that ticket in their existing system, and then that actually will dispatch the crew to go fix it. But what it does as well is it helps them visualize and see on the map, maybe I need to focus on this one stretch of road or this neighborhood, as opposed to just kind of not having as much planning around how to fix these various issues that you're seeing.
Yeah, and I think like a nice thing about that too is, right, like machine learning detections, predictions aren't the end of the story, right? The value of these things is what action can they drive? And a big part of that is like, once you've got the detection, how do we put it back into the human space where humans can act on this intelligently, can process it?
Right.
You know, seeing clusters of things on a map, hugely valuable. Parsing them into existing ticketing systems or other, you know, systems where people are using to make decisions, you know, all of that stuff is absolutely like the right way to follow up a machine learning model, because it's about driving decisions and making that easy in the way that people are already making those decisions.
Absolutely, great points, awesome stuff. So just recapping this solution, I think, you know, it is inspiring. It's really cool to see what Memphis has stepped out to do. And this journey for them started a couple years. So anybody listening to this or wants to jump on board, you're going to jump on board in a place where the solution is going to be pretty highly executable. I mean, all of this hard work that Memphis has put in to figure this thing out is done, and the beneficiaries are going to be other public works agencies that are ready to go to address different issues. And I want to hit on this one point, is that this isn't just a pothole detection system, even though that is like a, you know, one use case and it's the one that we decided to start with. This needs to really be thought of as a platform to augment intelligence for public works. And it should be thought of as a foundation for doing vision AI at scale using your existing fleet. And then once you have that kind of foundation set, it's just thinking about what issues your city is tackling and needs to handle, and building models and layering on top of that foundation. So your city might not struggle with potholes, but you might want to inventory all of your manholes. And that's something we did with in Costa Mesa, California, right? They want to address all of their manholes and detect and grade the condition around the apron of the manhole, right? And then that's something that they care about and need to address, right? But not as much with potholes. So think of it as, you know, a vision AI platform that is able to support and augment intelligence across any kind of public work situation.
Yeah, and just kind of whatever you would need to scan around your city. You know, I mean, these devices and these vehicles can take all manner of sensors, so it doesn't even have to be visual, but audio sensors, you know, like I'm sure we could get pollen sensors in there, you know, like detect air quality and other you know, things. So, you know, whatever kind of thinking about ambient scanning and what inventory of your city would you like to have? And I think there's ways to tackle those, you know, pretty much any given thing. It's very exciting. And I think, like, that's, you know, cool, contributing, and not just to public works, but just kind of smart cities generally, that, you know, cities that make data-driven decisions. You know, another thing that our public works folks here have talked to us about is how much better their lives are once they're not in this kind of crisis response mode where, you know, calls come in and it's a crisis and you have to deal with it then. You know, instead you can take a measured approach where you're out there looking for things, planning, prioritizing, and dispatching crews. You know, of course there's still calls Great that point. Come in that are things that need to be addressed in an urgent situation or whatever, but it's a much lower percent of the work that is done has to be reactive, and instead you can be proactive, measured, well prioritized,
totally,
and not running around just responding to things. And to me, that seems like, wow, what a difference in terms of the way a city can operate if it can be proactive and plan, you know, things in advance rather than just waiting around by a phone and responding.
It's so cool. It's a really, really amazing solution. And it's fun to work on this stuff with you, Andrew. So
hey, likewise. This is a blast. I mean, it's a real dream project, getting to do something that's, you know, good and helpful for a lot of people and fun, you know.
Yeah.
fun to get out there and see what we can see in the world.
All right, so that concludes this one on our Smart Government series. We will follow this up with a few others. We've got some topics, I think, coming up here. We want to talk about social services and some HR analytics around employee retention and improvement. I think we want to hit on blight and beautification for that city effort, and several other topics. So we'll continue this as long as we feel it's helpful and providing value to anyone who's listening. So
absolutely.